We must not allow it to be used so again. Her logic was unassailable. Kallik recalled how furious and grief-stricken Jaina had been when she teleported away from him. Too, she had been visibly affected by the arcane magic from the blast. It had whitened her hair, caused her eyes to glow. If it had done this to her body, what might it have done to her mind?
"I will find the focusing iris," he said heavily. "Whoever has it, Garrosh or Jaina."
Kiri hesitated now, glancing at Taralagos. "Perhaps it would be best if a party joined you in your search." Kallik bit back an angry retort. Kiri had ever been a good friend. She was his sister of the spirit, although they were not clutchmates. She did not cast aspersions on Jaina to hurt him. She did so because she was worried. Worried that he might be too affected by his feelings for Jaina Proudmore to complete his duty to his flight, and knowing him well enough to understand that if Kiri was right, Kallik would never forgive himself if something went wrong.
"I thank you for your concern," he said, "and I know you have only the good of our people in mind when you speak so. Please believe that I do as well. I must handle this on my own."
He waited. If there was too much of a protest, he would acquiesce to what the rest of the flight wished. He certainly had not done a faultless job by himself thus far. Fortunately, most of the Blues did not share Kiri's opinion. Kallik suspected that it was because they discounted Jaina, a single human, as a true threat. It was because Kiri recognized Jaina's abilities as being exceptionally strong that the Dragoness did not follow suit.
"Then it is settled," Kallik said. "I will not fail you again."
He spoke the words with conviction, hoping beyond hope that he was right. This wounded world could not bear it if he wasn't. Not so long ago, the former war chief of the Horde had held a celebration to welcome home the veterans who had fought against Arthas and in the Nexus War in Northrend. Garrosh well remembered the glorious parade to Orgrimmar. He himself had suggested it. It was at this celebration that Thrall had honored him, given him his father's weapon, which now rested securely against Garrosh's broad back. Garrosh was proud of how he'd fought in those wars, but he was even prouder of what he had done at Northwatch Hold and Theramore. In Northrend, at least part of the victory had been owed to the Alliance. The thought filled his mouth with ashy loathing. Now things were as they should be. Now the battle was against the Alliance. It was a war Thrall had had the power to start, but he had been too cowed by the fair-haired female mage. Instead, Thrall had fought for peace, whatever that could possibly be between the orcs and their former oppressors. Garrosh was determined to be to the Alliance what Grommish Hellscream had been to the demons. As the father had overthrown obedience and enslavement to fell creatures by slaying Manoroth, so the son would overthrow the subtler chains of peace with the Alliance. He was sure that even stubborn Bane and Vol'jin would come around eventually, and a true peace, on the Horde's terms, bought with blood and enforced with the same, would occur. And so, he had given instructions that this celebration, this victor's triumphal march to the capital of the Horde, would put thralls to shame. Nor would the march and a single feast be all. No. Garrosh had ordered 6 days' worth of festivities. Raptor fights in the arena, sparring battles with heavy purses to the greatest warriors of the Horde. Feast after feast, set to the accompaniment of Loctras and Lochvadnods, while the streets would flow with good orcish grog. At one point, as Garrosh and his retinue headed toward the gates of Orgrimmar, he saw with satisfaction that the throngs of cheering Horde members would not part for him. They chanted his name until it rose like thunder, and Garrosh gave Malkoroth a delighted look as he drank it in.
"Garrosh! Garrosh! 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 They love you too much to let you through, my war chief," said Malkoroth,
shouting to be heard above the noise.
Tell them of your victory. They wish to hear it from your lips.
Garrosh looked again at the crowd and cried,
Do you wish to hear my vision?
He had thought it impossible, but the crowd roared even louder. Garrosh's grin widened, and he waved them to silence.
My people, you are blessed among orcs to live in a time of history. A time when I, Garrosh Hellscream, am poised to claim Kalimdor for the Horde. The human contagion that had taken foul root in Theramore has been cleansed by the essence of arcane magic. They are no more. Jaina Proudmoore will no longer emasculate us as a people with her soft-mouthed words of peace. They fell on deaf ears, and now she and her kingdom are but dust. But that is not enough. The Night Elves are next. For so long, they have denied us the basic needs of life. We will deprive them of their lives, of their cities, and send what few we spare to become refugees of the Eastern Kingdoms. I, Garrosh, will humble them and reduce them to begging for mere morsels of food and a place to sleep while the Horde avails itself of their riches. Their cities are cut off from aid by stout Horde battleships, and when we are ready to invade, they will fall before us like weight before the scythe.
More cheering, more laughter and clapping. And another chant arose, spontaneous but inspired by his words.
Death to the Alliance! Death to the Alliance! Death to the Alliance!
Bane sat in the corner of the dank, dark inn at Razor Hill. What light came in through the door did nothing to illuminate the place. Indeed, only showed thick clusters of dancing dust motes. The beer was poor, and the food worse. A few miles due north, he could have been enjoying a feast, the likes of which he had never tasted. He was more than content here. Garrosh had forbidden the army to disperse. All Horde fighters had to stay in Durotar, but the warchief had not commanded Bane to attend the feasts in Orgrimmar. The oversight was an insult, and Bane was intelligent enough to know it. He also knew he was thankful for it. He feared that if he were forced to spend another moment listening to cheers for Garrosh, cheers for placing the Horde needlessly in harm's way, cheers for mass murder enacted in the most cowardly of fashions, he would be unable to stop himself from challenging the green-skinned fool. And if he did, no matter who walked away from the fight, the Horde itself would be the loser. He was not to be alone in his dark brooding. As he nursed the poor beer, he watched the doorway. More Tauren came in, nodded to Bane, and took their seats. After a time, he saw Vol'jin. The troll did not sit with him, but their eyes met. Then, to his surprise, he saw the bright gold and red garb of Sindori, and the tattered clothing of Forsaken. His heart lifted. Others saw what he saw, felt what he felt. Perhaps there might be a way to halt Garrosh's madness after all, before the Horde ended up having to pay the price. The salt-tinged sea air was filled with sound. It had not ceased since it began 2 days ago, when word of Theramore's fall had reached Varian, and would not cease until the task was complete. It was the sound of feverish activity, boards being cut to size, nails being pounded, engines being tinkered with. The barks of dwarves and the cheerful voices of gnomes punctuated the noises of industry. Not a citizen of Stormwind complained of the noise, for it meant hope. It was the sound of the Alliance, refusing to be broken by a single deadly but cowardly act. Brol Bearmantle, Varian, and Anduin stood together, gazing out at the harbor. The day had only just dawned, and the sails being carefully raised on one of the great new vessels were tinged with the pinkness of a sun peeking over the horizon.
"I don't think I've ever seen quite so many workers all in one place.
Not even an Ironforge, said Anduin. Per his own request, Anduin was to remain in Stormwind until the fleet had sailed, at which time he would return to his studies with the Draenei. Varian smiled down at his son, glad that the youth had chosen to remain. The encounter with Jaina had startled and upset both of them. Anduin, in particular, reeled with the shock of seeing peace-loving Aunt Jaina so full of hatred. They had talked long into the evening, the man who had once identified with Jaina's new attitude, and the boy who quelled from it, talked about what grief and loss could do to someone, talked about what war and violence as well could do. Anduin had lifted sad but determined eyes to his father. I know this is a horrible thing, he said. And I realize we have to attack the Horde. They've shown us what they are willing to do, and we must prevent them from harming more innocent people. But I don't want to be like Jaina. Not about this. We can protect our people, but we don't have to do it with hate in our hearts. Varian's own heart had swelled with pride. He had not expected such acceptance, reluctant though it was from Anduin. He was honestly surprised that he himself hadn't shared Jaina's feelings, and realized how far he had come from the man he had once been. There was a time when he had been filled with anger and rage, when parts of himself had been at war. He had been two beings, literally, and the rejoining physically was only a portion of the battle. He'd been taught to integrate those parts in his very soul, through the blessing of the wolf ancient, Goldrin. Truly, he had made great progress. He might even be as wise as his son one day. Rol had departed Teldrassil through magical means, an option not available to most of his people. The report of the blockade had been sobering, but not unexpected.
It is good to see this construction, the druid said, as the three stood together. Do not think that you will sail alone, Varian. While we have many ships trapped by the Horde's blockade, there are many more elsewhere. Malfurion and Taranda are more than willing to help you as best they can. You may look to see a few dozen of our graceful ships alongside yours in the not-too-distant future.
Anduin turned to regard the druid, craning his neck to look up at this friend of his father's. Anduin knew that Brol, too, had had to face loss and rage and hatred. Varian thought it must hearten the prince to see two former gladiators standing and discussing what had to be done, with regret rather than glee. Light. It heartened him.
You will not try to fight your way out of the blockade? Asked Anduin. No. Our energies are best put towards teamwork right now. What lives we must sacrifice need to count, Anduin. We have a better chance of winning when we focus together.
Anduin's golden head turned again to the ships in the harbor.
Why did the Horde do this? They didn't know we had relocated the civilians. They just...
His voice trailed off. Varian laid a gentle hand on his son's shoulder.
The easy answer is that the Horde are monsters. What they did was monstrous, certainly. And I have a few choice words about Garrosh and his Korkron that I will not utter in front of young ears.
Anduin gave him the ghost of a grin. Growing sober again, Varian continued.
I don't know why, son. I wish I could tell you why people do such horrible things. The fact that I am certain many who are not Alliance are quietly muttering about Garrosh doesn't sway my hand.
But we won't fight like Garrosh did.
No, Varian said. We won't.
But if he is willing to do things we are not, won't that mean he will win?
Not while I have breath in my body, said Brawl. Nor I, said Varian. The world has become unhinged. I saw violence and blood and madness in the pit. I did not expect to ever see anything like what Jaina was forced to witness.
Do you think she will recover? From the hurt to her soul, that seeing that gave her?
I hope so, was all Varian could say. I hope so.
Chapter 22. The Violet Citadel was somber and still, as Jaina slowly walked up the stone steps from the entrance hall. Pain wrapped this place. Once, Dalaran had felt light to her. The designs and structures certainly were graceful, but more than that, it was a place where magic was integral. Now it felt heavy, in a way it had never had before. Jaina, bearing her own burdens, sensed it, feeling kin to those who had lost so much. Several extremely powerful magi, including the leader of the Kirin Tor, and one traitor, who was at least partially responsible for those bitter losses. No wonder the very air felt thick and sad.
"Lady Proudmoore," said a voice brittle with pain.
Jaina turned, and she felt a stab of sympathy. Barisa Windrunner stood alone in the huge entrance chamber. She wore clean plate armor in shades of silver and blue, and any wounds she had endured in battle were either healed or healing. All but one, which Jaina felt would never fully heal. The Widow of Ronan looked impassive, as if she were little more than an animated statue, except her blue eyes blazed with fury. Jaina wondered if that fury was directed at the Horde for murdering her husband, or at Jaina, or even herself, for surviving.
"Ranger General Varisa," Jaina said. "I find I have no words."
Varisa shook her head.
"There are no words," she said flatly. "Only action. I have been waiting for you, since I heard you yet lived, for I knew you would come. And I come to you to implore that you will help me in obtaining that action. You survived. My beloved did not. You, I, and a handful of Night Elven sentinels are the only ones who can give voice to the slaughter at Theramore. You've obviously come to speak to the Kirin Tor. May I ask what you intend to say to them?"
Jaina knew that Varisa was leader of the Silver Covenant, a presence the High Elf herself had formed as a precaution against possible treachery from the Sunreavers, Blood Elves, who had been granted permission to join the Kirin Tor. As such, Varisa was vocal and outspoken, but had no formal voice in the Kirin Tor. Neither did Jaina, officially, but as the sole living mage to report about the disaster, and as the one whom Ronan had chosen to portal to safety, even as he called the mana bomb down upon himself, she knew she would be given an audience. Now that Ronan was gone, Jaina found herself remembering a particular conversation. How he had told her that many of the Kirin Tor wished she had not chosen the path she did, how they wanted her to be one of their number. Jaina might not have been a member of the Kirin Tor, but she was certainly going to speak to them. Barisa was still looking at her, her face an implacable mask that doubtless concealed a maelstrom of anguish and rage. Suddenly moved, Jaina strode to the other woman and blurted out,
"Ronan cared about two things when he died. He wanted to make sure you would survive, and he made the effort to get me to safety. He bought both our lives with his own."
"What?"
"The bomb landed where it did because Ronan called it to him. Ronan used his magic to redirect it to the tower, which was heavily warded and magically protected, so the blast would cause as little damage as possible."
The facade was starting to crack. Varisa lifted a trembling hand to her lips, listening.
He told me that I needed to survive, that I was the future of the Kirin Tor, and if I didn't go through the portal he was struggling to keep open, we would both die, and his efforts would be for nothing. I refused to leave, and he pushed me through. Varisa, I don't understand why he chose me. Theramore was my city. I should have died for it. But he was the one who died. And I will not forget that, not as long as I draw breath. And I will do all that I can to be worthy of his sacrifice. I was there, Varisa. I know what they did. And I will urge the Council to make sure the Horde is never, ever in so powerful a position again.
that no one else has to suffer as we have.
Barisa's lips curved into a trembling smile, and the next thing the mage knew, the two women were hugging each other tightly, and Jaina felt warm tears against her neck. For the second time in more than a week, Jaina stood in the chamber of the air. It looked the same, if something that constantly changed could be called the same. The simple gray stone beneath her feet was the same, and the display of shifting sky from night to day, from storm to stars, was familiar. Yet everything was different. Jaina was no longer dazzled by the glorious vista, nor by the honor of being permitted to speak to the Council of Six. Five, now. She was unmoved as she looked about at the faces of the remaining members of the Council. Standing next to them, but not officially part of them, was the stone-faced Barisa. Jaina was glad she'd been permitted to attend. Surely she'd earned the right by losing the one she loved best in this world.
Sad is the occasion that welcomes Lady Jaina Proudmoore a second time to these chambers, but glad are we to see you survived.
It was Khadgar who spoke, and this time he seemed to truly be the age his appearance proclaimed him as. His voice was weary, he leaned heavily on a staff, and even his formerly dancing eyes looked old. His companions, too, appeared strained. Modera had dark circles beneath her eyes. Disciplined Carlane was clearly having difficulty restraining his anger and pain. Aethys, the leader of the Sunreavers, who'd recommended Phelan Songweaver, still wore his helmet, so Jaina could not see his face. But his body language was agitated.
"Thank you for seeing me," Jaina said. "Forgive me if I dispense with formalities. I came here not so long ago, asking for the Kirin Tor's help to defend Theramore. You granted it, and for that I am grateful. For the death of Archmage Ronan, I grieve with you. He died a true hero. I am alive because of him. I am humbled by that gesture, and I vow to honor it as best I can. I will not mince words. I am here to ask you to join with the Alliance in attacking the Horde. The armies gather in Orgrimmar to feast and drink and celebrate a massacre. If we strike now, we will destroy them so that they are unable to perpetrate such evil again.
Dalaran is neutral, said Modera. We went to Theramore only to protect and advise.
And if you had done more than that, Theramore might be of note to mapmakers of the future, Jaina retorted. Ronan gave his life to stop the man a bomb as best he could. If there had been more, if the full force of the Kirin Tor had been brought to bear, he might still be alive.
I am revolted by Garrosh's actions, said Aethys, and I take responsibility for the harm done by one of my own Sunreavers. But attacking Orgrimmar is not the answer.
You Sunreavers cannot be trusted, growled Verisa.
She looked imploringly at the other members of the council.
Why is he even still here? They are traitors, all of them. I warned you not to let them join the Kirin Tor.
There have been human traitors and high elf and gnome and orc, said Aethys calmly. I will do what I can to atone for the treachery of Songweaver. The irony that I sent him as a gesture of goodwill does not escape me. But we must not abandon our stance of neutrality for vengeance.
Others were nodding. Khadgar looked thoughtful, as if he were turning things over in his mind. Jaina could not believe their reactions, their hesitation.
What will it take for you to realize that the Horde will eventually turn on you? They do not understand neutral, just as they do not understand diplomacy or decency. They will flow over Kalimdor, then turn on the Eastern Kingdoms, then come here. Your refusal to stop them will mean that one day soon, Horde will be swarming over Dalaran itself. Please, strike while we still can. We have uprooted the city once. Let us do so now. Take it to Orgrimmar. Attack from above, while they lie in a drunken stupor dreaming of conquest. You've lost Ronan and an entire city. Will you act when Teldrassil falls? When they are burning a world tree?
Lady Jaina, said Madeira, you have been through the unspeakable. You have beheld horrors and watched a friend die while he saved you. There is no one here who approves of the actions of the Horde. But we must meet to decide what next to do. We will summon you when we have reached a decision.
Jaina bit her tongue against a flood of retorts and nodded. They would do the right thing. They had to.
Jaina found both Windle and Jaxie Sparkshine in a corner at the inn called A Hero's Welcome. The normally lively and bright tavern was quiet and solemn. There was little welcoming about it. Jaina hesitated in the doorway, wondering if she should intrude upon their grief, wondering if she could bear the torment she knew she would see in their eyes. They had entrusted Kindi to her, and she had failed them. There hadn't even been enough of the girl left to bury. She closed her eyes against the sting of tears and turned to leave. As she did so, she heard a voice calling,
"Lady Proudmore?"
She flinched, then turned around. Both gnomes had slipped from their table and were walking over to her. How old they looked now, Jaina thought. Kindi had come to them later in life. A little miracle, they called her. Jaina's words floated back to her.
I give you my word. I will keep her as safe as I possibly can.
She'd planned to be eloquent, to praise Kindi as the girl deserved, to give her bereaved family comfort, to let them know that Kindi had fought well and bravely, that she had been a light to everyone who knew her, that she died defending others. What burst from Jaina's lips was,
I'm sorry. I'm so, so sorry.
And for several long moments, it was the Sparkshines who gave Jaina Proudmore comfort. They sat back down at the table, talking of Kindi, wanting to be farther along in the healing process than any of them were.
I've asked the Kirin Tor for help, Jaina said,
her feelings too raw to continue speaking of her apprentice.
I'm hoping they will join the Alliance and attack Orgrimmar, to stop anyone else from ending up like Kindi.
Windle glanced away for a moment, and Jaina realized he was listening to the chimes sounding the hour. Before she could apologize for keeping them so long, the gnome mage had slipped off his chair.
It's 9 o'clock.
Oh, yes, Jaina said, remembering. You light all the streetlights in Dalaran. I should let you be about it.
The little mage swallowed hard, and his bright eyes grew even brighter with tears.
Come with me on my rounds, he said. I've gotten special permission, only for a time, but it helps.
Jaxie shooed them both along with a faint glimmer of her old self.
I've gone with him before, she said. I think it's right you should go.
Jaina was utterly confused, but still so racked with guilt and pain that she was more than ready to do whatever the Sparkshines asked of her. So she followed Windle out, keeping her steps slow and short so she didn't outpace him. He shuffled outside and stood beneath one of the lamps, then drew out a small wand with an almost childish-looking star on the end. Then, with more grace than she expected, he pointed the wand at the lamp. A spark flew from the tip, dancing around like a firefly. It did not light the street lamp immediately. Instead, the glowing, magical flame began to draw lines in the space above the lamp. Jaina's eyes widened, then filled with tears. The golden light was tracing the shape of a laughing gnome girl with pigtails. When the sketch was done, it came to life for a moment, small hands covering a giggling mouth, and Jaina could have sworn she heard Kindi's voice. She glanced down with blurred vision at Windle, and saw that the gnome, too, wept, though his eyes crinkled in a loving smile. Then, the golden lines broke apart, and reformed into a larger ball of light, darting under the shade of the lamp. This lamp lit, Wendell turned and trudged toward the next. Jaina stayed where she was, watching once more as Wendell Sparkshine paid tribute to his murdered daughter, letting her live for a little while each night. No doubt, when the tragedy had faded in others' eyes, Wendell would be asked to light the lamps in the usual fashion. But for now, everyone in Dalaran had a chance to see Kindi as Jaina and her parents had, bright and sparkling, her face alight with laughter. The summons to return to the Chamber of the Air was not too long in coming. For the third time, Jaina stood in the center of the strange but beautiful room, regarding the council with enforced calmness.
"Lady Jaina Proudmoore," Khadgar said, "before I tell you our verdict, know this. We utterly condemn the attack on Theramore with all our hearts, down to a member. It was cowardly and despicable. The Horde will learn of our displeasure and be cautioned against the usage of such wanton destruction. But this is a troubled time indeed, especially for those of us who wield and would regulate and manage magic. A short time ago, we chose to offer our expertise and wisdom. We even agreed to help defend Theramore. Because of that decision, we were betrayed by one of our own and lost several fine magi, including our leader, Archmage Ronan. Magic is in a dire state in this world now, lady. No one is sure who's supposed to be doing what. The Blues no longer have an aspect. They have lost a precious artifact that has been used for destruction, and we don't even have a leader to guide us or take responsibility.
Jaina felt a cold sensation in the pit of her stomach and fought to keep her hands from clenching. She knew what they were about to say.
"We can't take care of Azeroth if we are in disarray ourselves," Khadgar said. "We've got to reform, examine just what exactly went wrong. We can't give what we don't have, lady. And what we don't have is any real sense of what needs to happen next. You've come to ask us to throw the full force of our magi behind the Alliance. You've asked us to transport Dalaran to Orgrimmar and rain destruction down upon an entire city. We can't do that, Jaina. We simply can't. We've only just figured out we're grown up enough to deal with having Horde representatives among us, Sun Reavers, and now you want us to destroy Orgrimmar? The world would erupt in civil war, and our part in it would ensure this very city, which has endured so much, would also be divided. And even if we weren't, even if Dalaran and the Kirin Tor were in a state where we could handle this, there are merchants and craftsmen and innkeepers and travelers who never marched on Theramore. For pity's sake, there's an orphanage in Orgrimmar, my lady. We can't, we won't obliterate innocence."
Jaina had to take a moment to make her voice steady enough to speak.
"The orphans there will grow up to become Horde," she said. "They are being taught to hate us, to plot against us. There are no innocents in that light-forsaken city, Khadgar. There are no innocents anywhere. Not anymore."
Before Khadgar could speak, she had conjured the portal. The last thing she saw before she stepped through was his young, old eyes, filled with sorrow. Jaina did not go far. Her destination was the main library. She'd been here before, long ago, when she'd lived and studied in Dalaran. As she crossed the threshold in the company of one of the Kirin Tor librarians, she felt the very air of the place brush against her body, then subside. In years past, she'd cast a recognition spell in order to enter safely. The library wards still remembered her. The librarian respected her request to be alone to peruse the books. He, as Khadgar had, looked at her with sad, sympathetic eyes. She did not want his sympathy, but she was willing to use it for her own purposes. Her request for solitude in this vast storehouse of books and scrolls had nothing to do with her alleged desire for quiet and reflection. Once the sound of his footfalls had died away, and she was certain she would not be disturbed, Jaina turned her attention to the books. It was a daunting task, to be certain. The room was enormous and filled with shelf after shelf that towered high into the air. Jaina knew from experience there was no real order here. Chaos and illogical filing methods would help to confound more mundane thieves, yet be no hindrance to magic. She flicked her right hand. A small radiance appeared at the tips of the fingers, and she pressed the glowing digits to her temples for a moment. Then she extended her hand. The faint, light purple radiance left her fingers like a tiny tendril of fog and rose to the topmost shelf. While Jaina examined copies of books and read the labels of scroll cases with more ordinary senses, the arcane mist was seeking something else. Time passed. Jaina found many tomes that, in the past, she could have happily curled up with for days. Now they held no interest for her. She was single-minded and pure of purpose. Title by title, she read and discarded. This was Dalaran. It had to be here. There came a sudden flash in the corner of her eye, and she turned, smiling. The little arcane mist had accomplished its task. It had found something on a shelf that contained some of the library's rarest tomes, the most dangerous, the ones that were carefully locked with magical seals, even the ones that weren't visible. Jaina quickly scanned the titles. Dreaming with Dragons, The True History of the Aspects of Azeroth. Death, Undeath, and In Between. What the Titans Knew. The Sixth Element. Additional Methods of Arcane Augmentation and Manipulation. Gently, she placed her hand on the spine of the book. It felt as if she were touching a living thing. It almost quivered beneath her questing fingers. She pulled it out, and immediately it began to glow violet as the protective wards hummed. Jaina gasped and nearly dropped the book as an image formed, made of purple smoke. Archmage Antonidas's visage peered at her, stern and cautionary.
"This is not for idle hands, nor prying eyes," the familiar loved voice said. "Information must not be lost, but it must not be used unwisely. Stay your hand, friend, or proceed, if you know the way."
Jaina bit her lip as Antonidas's visage faded. Each mage who consigned a book to the Great Library put his or her own warding seal on it. That meant that Antonidas had discovered this book, probably before Jaina was even born, and placed it on this shelf. Judging by the dust, it had not been disturbed since. Was it a sign of some sort that she was meant to find this? The book continued to glow. She did not know the proper words to open it easily, and so had to resort to a less pleasant method. She could force the seals to break, but she would have to act swiftly to avoid setting off magical alarms. Jaina sank into one of the comfortable chairs and placed the book on her lap. She took a deep, steadying breath and cleared her mind. Gazing at her right hand, she murmured an incantation of shattering. Her hand suddenly glowed bright purple. Now, she lifted her left hand and concentrated. The hand began to fade before her eyes, visible only because it was limned with pale, violet light. This could work, but only if she was very fast. She took another, steadying breath, then placed her right hand down on the book. Shatter! The violet glow emanating from her hand danced and crackled over the book like lightning. She could feel it breaking the magical seal Antonidas had placed on the book, feel it hurt as it was unwillingly forced open. She stared, not daring to blink. The very instant that the violet lightning started to subside, she slammed her left hand over the tome. Silence! A field flared to bright white life, encircling the book, silencing the magical cry it emitted. Slowly, the glow on both hands faded, and her left one gradually became visible.
She'd done it.
Quickly and carefully, mindful of the book's age, Jaina began to leaf through it. There were all kinds of illustrations of magical items. Jaina didn't recognize most of them. It seemed that many things had been lost to time, and there it was, the focusing iris. She began to read, skimming over the compelling but now unnecessary details as to how the blue dragons had created it and the various things it had been used for. She didn't care what it had done. She knew firsthand what it had done. She wanted to know what could be done with it now. Amplification. Any and all arcane commands will be augmented by proper directional usage of the object. In keeping with this author's theory that the arcane is an element unto itself, he humbly offers the fact that there is at least one documented occasion wherein the focusing iris was utilized to enslave, direct, and control various elemental beings. Jaina felt almost giddy. She rose and looked around, making certain she was still alone in the vast chamber. Then, carefully, she wrapped the book in her cloak and moved swiftly out the door and down the steps. She had one more visit left to make in this city before she departed on what was looking to be a solitary venture of revenge. Chapter 23. It had been Jaina herself who had designed the statue. She'd covered the costs and selected the artist. Now, Antonidas supervised the city he'd given his life to protect. The image of her friend had had a spell cast upon it, so that it hovered about 6 feet off the grass. Below the image of the great man was a plaque. Archmage Antonidas, Grand Magus of the Kirin Tor, the great city of Dalaran stands once again, a testament to the tenacity and will of its greatest son. Your sacrifices will not have been in vain, dearest friend. With love and honor, Jaina Proudmore. Jaina now stood on the soft green grass and looked up at her friend. The sculptor had been talented, able to capture Antonidas's combination of sternness and kindness. In one hand, ceaselessly turned a small orb, sparkling with magic. In the other, Antonidas bore his great staff, Archis. Jaina still kept the book hidden in her cloak, lest some sharp eye spy it. She placed a hand on it as it lay, solid and reassuring, wrapped in the fabric. The memories flowed easily, and, for the most part, painlessly here, in the shadow of her mentor's statue. This man had seen so much promise in her, and had taught her with cheer, enthusiasm, and pride. She remembered long conversations with him about esoteric matters and the finer points of magic, such as the positioning of one's fingers and the angle of one's body. At that time, both she and he had been certain that in Dalaran she would progress far, even rise high in the Kirin Tor, and the beautiful city would be her home. The soft smile that had touched her lips faded. So much, too much had happened. She clung to the hope that somehow her mentor had reached past the grasp of death to guide her to the book that would tell her precisely how to use the focusing iris. She hoped he would bless her endeavor. Surely he would, if he had seen what she had seen. A gentle touch on her shoulder caused her to start and almost drop the cloak-wrapped book. She caught it at the last second and turned.
"I'm sorry. I didn't mean to startle you," Calicos said.
Paranoia gripped her.
"How did you know I was here?"
she asked, trying to keep her tone light and casual.
"I returned to the Nexus after you left. I sensed your arrival here in Dalaran from there.
His blue eyes were unhappy.
I think I can guess why you've come.
She looked away.
I came to ask for help from the Kirin Tor, help to fight the Horde after what they did to Theramor. They refused me.
He hesitated, then said quietly,
Jaina, I went to Theramor too. If the bomb fell on the city, and we know it did, then the focusing iris should have been there as well. It was gone.
I'm willing to bet the Horde sent someone to retrieve it, Jaina said. I fought several of them.
That's likely, he said in agreement.
Can you still sense it? She asked.
No, but I would definitely know if it had been destroyed. So that means that, once again, it appears that a powerful mage is hiding it from me, and doing an even better job this time. And, as we have so tragically seen, if it still exists, it can be used to do great harm in this world.
So, her shielding spell had worked.
Then you'd better be about finding it.
She disliked lying to him, but she knew he wouldn't understand. Or would he? If he had been to Theramor, seen what she had seen, maybe he shared her feelings.
Kallik, the Kirin Tor won't help me. You once said you would fight for me, for the Lady of Theramor. Theramore's gone, but I'm still here.
Impulsively, she reached out and grasped his hand. He held hers tightly.
Help me, please. We have to destroy the Horde. They won't stop with just this, and you know it.
She could see the struggle in his soul reflected on his face, and understood how deeply he truly cared for her. As, she was coming to realize, she cared for him. But this was no time for the gentle sweetness of courtship, of romance. There was no room for love when the Horde still existed, was able to do such hideous things. She needed every weapon she could find, and, regardless of her own desires, Jaina knew she had to make her heart turn to steel.
I can't do that, Jaina, he said,
and his voice was raw with pain.
This implacable, well, hatred, it's not you. The Jaina I knew still sought peace, still tried to understand, even as she prepared to defend her people. I can't believe you truly want to perpetrate the same horror on them as they did to Theramore. No sane mind, no good heart should ever wish that on anyone.
So you think I've gone insane, she said lightly, but angrily.
She drew her hand back.
No, he said, but you are too close to the situation to judge your next course of action wisely. I think you would be acting out of pain, out of anger. No one blames you for feeling that way, but you mustn't act when you are in this irrational state of mind. I know you, and I believe you'd come to regret it.
She narrowed her eyes and stepped back.
I know you care for me, and you mean what you say in the kindest way possible. But you're wrong. This is me. This is who the Horde made me when they dropped that cursed bomb on my city. You don't want to help me? You don't hear the voices that cry out for justice? Fine, don't help me. But whatever you do, do not get in my way.
He bowed low as she turned and strode off, clutching the book. The book that Antonidas had warded, the book that would help her let the dead rest in peace, the book that would give her the power to make the Horde taste what it had done to her heart. The inn at Razor Hill was raking in the revenue, and the innkeeper, Grosk, didn't mind at all. Razor Hill had always been a rough-and-tumble town, populated as it usually was with soldiers and transients who never stayed long. With so many coming in for meals and grog at all hours while the celebrating continued in Orgrimmar, Grosk thought, as he made his usual half-hearted effort to clean the glasses, that it was about time he got some of the spillover from the capital city. If some of the talk wasn't all praise and approval, well, so what? There had been grumbling about Thrall, too. People loved to complain.
discontent about the war chief, the weather, the wars, the other races of the Horde, the Alliance, one's mate. It was good for business. There was a reason visiting a bar was called drowning one's sorrows. So, with his grungy little inn filled to capacity, with all the races of the Horde, Grosk was feeling very good indeed about life. Until the Corcron walked in. They filled the door, making the dark building even darker as their mammoth forms blocked out the light. Prandis Farley, having a poor excuse for a drink with Kelentir Bloodblade, turned at the sight.
"Trouble," Kelentir whispered.
"Not necessarily," Prandis replied, in an equally soft voice.
Before his companion realized what he was about to do, the undead was waving and calling cheerfully.
"Friend Malgorok, are you slumming? The contents of a chamber pot are probably better than the swill this rascal Grosk serves, but it's cheap, and I hear it does the job. Come, let us buy you a round."
The Corcron looked to their leader, who nodded.
"Grosk," Malgorok rumbled. "Drinks all around."
He clapped Frandis on the back so hard the Forsaken nearly fell forward on the table.
"I might expect to find Torin or Forsaken here."
He sneered as Grosk busied himself plopping down dirty glasses and a large jug of grog.
"But I must say, you look sorely out of place."
"Not at all," said Kelentir, narrowing her eyes. "I have been in worse places than this."
"Perhaps, perhaps," Malgorok said. "But why are you not in Orgrimmar?"
"Iron allergy," Kelentir said. For an instant, Malgorok stared at her. Then he threw his head back in a guttural laugh.
"It does seem that you and several others prefer more rustic environments," he said. "Where is that young bull Bane and his toady Vol'jin? I'd hoped to speak to them."
"I have not seen them in a while," said Kelentir, putting her boots up on the table. "I do not much involve myself with the Torin."
"Really?"
Malgorok looked puzzled.
"Yet we have witnesses that put both you and Frandis right in this very inn just last night, in close conversation with both the Torin and the Troll, among others. They reported that you were saying things like, 'Garrosh is a fool, and Thrall should return and kick him all the way to the Undercity,' and it was cowardly to use the mana bomb on Theramore." "And the elements,"
put in another of the Corcron conversationally, as he reached for the jug of grog and refilled his cup.
"Yes, the elements. Something about how it was too bad Cairn hadn't killed him when he had the chance, because Thrall would never utilize the elements in such a cruel and insulting fashion."
The Blood Elf and the Forsaken were silent now. Malgorok pressed on.
"But if you say you haven't seen Bane or Vol'jin recently, then I suppose those witnesses must be mistaken."
"Clearly," said Frandis. "You need better informants."
"We must,"
Malgorok said in agreement.
"For it's obvious to me that neither of you would ever say such things against Garrosh and his leadership."
"I'm glad you understand that," said Frandis. "Thanks for the drinks. Can I buy the next round?"
"No, we'd best be on our way. See if we can find Vol'jin and Bane, since, unfortunately for us, they are not here."
Malgorok rose and nodded.
"Enjoy your drinks."
The two watched them go. When the Corcron had departed, Kelentir closed her eyes and exhaled.
"That was far too close for comfort."
"Indeed," said Frandis. "For half a moment, I expected to be arrested, if not outright attacked."
The Blood Elf turned to signal for more drinks, then frowned.
"That is odd," she said. "Grosk is gone."
"What? With such a crowded inn?"
He should be hiring more help, not skipping out with several thirsty customers waiting on him.
Their eyes met. No word was spoken between them, but as one, they rose and charged for the door. They almost made it, until a frost grenade locked them into position. Three frag grenades finished the job, and Razor Hill Inn exploded. King Varian Wrynn and Prince Anduin stood in a large open chamber in Stormwind Keep, known as the Map Room, due to the enormous raised map that occupied most of the large space. Two braziers burned, warming the stone chamber. Weapons of war lined the walls, everything from blunderbusses to swords, to even three cannons. There were areas piled high with books about military strategy, but for now, Varian and the others gathered here had their attention on the map. Assembled were representatives of all the Alliance races. Emissary Talun represented the Draenei. Brol spoke for the Night Elves, and King Ghen Greymane for the Worgen of Gilneas. Present as well were the gnome's High Tinker, Gelban Mechatork, and three dwarves, one from each of the dwarven clans. Jovial Thargus Anvilmar of the Bronzebeards, the dour dark iron dwarf Drukan, and cheerful Curdren Wildhammer. Differences seemed to be put aside for the moment. Even Drukan was willing to speak with courtesy and listened with interest. The blockade concerned them all, including those who hailed from the Eastern Kingdoms. No one could afford to turn a blind eye to the potential conquest of an entire continent. Varian stood as if lost in thought. Brol cleared his throat. Varian looked up and gestured to indicate that Brol should speak, then seemed to return to his own musing.
I will speak for my people and, I am certain, all those Alliance who suffer from this action of the Horde, said Brol. And while it may seem self-centered to recommend that Darkshore be the first site to be liberated, I have an offer as well as a request. We have several vessels and the elves to crew them, standing ready to assist as soon as we are given the chance. Despite the hardship wrought by the Cataclysm, it is still a major hub. We have shipping lanes that connect us with Ruthuran Village and Feathermoon Stronghold. Once we free up Darkshore, we will have an advantage.
Our spies report that the Horde seems to think we'd choose Feathermoon Stronghold, said Greymane.
He grinned a little.
Oh, I'm continuing to let them think that. Did you know that the Grim Totem of Feralus are planning an attack on the Horde? Taking advantage of their distraction? How terrible for the Horde.
Chuckles went around the room. Still, Varian frowned slightly as he looked at the map.
They think Chandra's Feathermoon dead, as far as we can tell, Roll said. They see the conquest of Feathermoon Stronghold to be more than a military victory. They see it, even more so, as a symbolic one. They will be in for a surprise when they find her at the head of her troops.
The mood sobered at once. Of all the brilliant warriors and tacticians sent to aid Theramore, only Chandris and Varisa remained. So many had been lost. For all the passion in the room to strike back and halt the Horde's advance, there was still much grief.
Has anyone been to Theramore? Gelban asked quietly.
There was an awkward silence.
Lady Jaina, Anduin said. Yes, indeed, said Gelban. And what a blessing that she still survives. Speaking of Lady Jaina, I assume there's a sound reason she's not here with us, strategizing today.
Lady Jaina is pursuing her own methods, Varian said,
finally joining in the conversation. All eyes turned to him.
She is too impatient to work with us, and I cannot pass judgment. What she deals with, even I cannot truly know how she feels, although I have known similar pain. What happened at Theramore must never be allowed to happen again, said Talun. Not by any being. All sane people must deplore such acts and forswear them utterly, or else risk destroying the very things that make us able to touch the light.
There were murmurs of agreement. Varian looked at Anduin and nodded, almost imperceptibly. The boy's blue eyes had gone sad when talk of Jaina had come up, but now they crinkled slightly at the edges with a wan smile.
"I agree," Varian said. "But Lady Jaina may be right about one thing."